Chapter 6. Spoiled Potatoes. Day after day, the gold ships beat their way north along the ragged coast of Chile. Black smoke boiled up from their funnels and headwinds spun it out into the long streamers. Jack sat on a keg and Praiseworthy stood over him with a pair of scissors. The boy's hair had shot up like broom straw during the long passage through the strait, and Praiseworthy had no intention of letting it grow any longer. "Hold still." "I am holding still," said Jack, "still as I can." Praiseworthy snipped away. "You'll be a young man before your Aunt Arabella sees you again. May she forgive me. You're getting your height like a sapling." "Praiseworthy," said Jack, "do you think we'll strike it rich?" "No doubt about it." The wind carried away the snips of yellow hair. "Maybe all the gold nuggets will be dug up before we get there." "Nonsense. There'll be enough for all." But in the privacy of his thoughts, Praiseworthy didn't believe for a moment that they would be stubbing their toes on lumps of gold. Still, he must see to it that young Master Jack did strike it rich. It would not do to return to Boston without a sack or two of treasure. Why some of the passengers had brought along chests and boxes to fill their nuggets and gold dust. As Praiseworthy clipped away, passengers stood around watching and offering advice. Even a haircut broke the monotony of these endless days at sea. "Needs a little more of a snip on the port side," said Dr. Buckby, who had thrown away his alarm trumpet and regained his good humor. "Nah," said Mountain Jim. "Work them shears along the starboard beam there, Praiseworthy. That's where it wants evening up a mite." A shout from the outlook deck drew everyone's attention to the Sea Raven astern. "She stopped making smoke, Captain." Smoke had indeed stopped billowing from her funnel. Captain Swain came out on the deck and gave the ship a squint. "Her coal bunkers are empty," he said. "She went around the horn. We saved fuel slipping through the strait, but we're not in much better shape ourselves, gentlemen. If this wind doesn't turn around, we'll be burning our last lump soon enough." By the end of the day, the Sea Raven slipped entirely from view behind the horizon, and Praiseworthy took no comfort from the Lady Wilma's lead. "It's the end of the race that counts," he said again. The wind didn't turn around. It died away completely. The Lady Wilma was able to keep steam up in her boiler for almost a week. One day grew warmer than the next, and soon the gold seekers were peeling off their coats and sweaters. Jack shucked off his shoes and took to climbing the ratlines and the tarred hemp ladders, stretched up to the mast tops, wearing a stocking cap. The first mate had given him, he would spend hours in the crow's nest seeing the world. There were times when he felt he could almost see California. The day came when the last shovelful of coal was scraped out of the bins and the boiler fire burned out. The merry thrash and throb of the side winds ceased, and the Lady Wilma sat becalmed. Day after day, the gold ship languished on the sea, waiting for a good wind to fill her canvas. A week passed, too, and then the fresh water in the tanks got dangerously low, and Captain Swain ordered it rationed for drinking only. From the crow's nest, Jack looked down on the gold seekers wandering the decks like caged men. One day, Praiseworthy came up the ratlines, bowler hat, umbrella, and all, and they watched for the whales to pass the time. "Is Aunt Arabella an old maid?" Jack asked solemnly. "An old maid?" replied Praiseworthy. He leaned his chin on the hook of his umbrella. "Your Aunt Arabella is a young and beautiful woman. Is it because of my sisters and me?" "Is what because of your dear sisters and you?" "I mean, if she didn't have to bring us up, maybe she would have gotten married a long time ago." The butler dismissed the thought. "Stuff and nonsense. Sarah said once it was because of us. Dear Sarah is mistaken. I have no doubt that Aunt Arabella is merely waiting for the right gentleman to come along, and I dare say he'll be delighted to gain two fine nieces and a stalwart young nephew. Constance said Aunt Arabella was in love once, but he died, and she never got over it. Dear Miss Constance is mistaken, I'm sure, Praiseworthy replied softly. No, let's have no more talk of this. Look there, aren't those sharks? Sharks they were, and Mountain Jim, who was fishing, caught one. He called the cook and Mr. Azariah Jones and gasped, "You're not going to eat that thing, are you?" "I sure am," answered Mountain Jack. Mountain Jim, if he had the chance, he'd eat me, wouldn't he? Another week passed, and Mr. Azariah Jones' 18 barrels of potatoes began to spoil in the hold. "I'm ruined," he wailed, pacing the hot deck, and his heavy face hung slack under a large straw hat. "Nonsense," said Praiseworthy out for a stroll. "I'm a poor man," groaned the Yankee trader. I had every cent I own in those potatoes. I tell you, I'm ruined." "Then you must sell them," remarked the butler, who wished only to be of service. "Sell spoiled potatoes? My friend, it's clear that you have nothing about to trade. Not a thing. Who do you think will buy them?" "I haven't the faintest idea," said Praiseworthy, "but that's only because I haven't given it the matter any thought." It was a knotty problem, even for Praiseworthy. The next day, the French immigrant, Monsieur Gaunt, could be seen pacing the deck in one direction while Mr. Azariah Jones paced in the other. "Mon Dieu," declared the Frenchman, "I'm ruined. My grape cuttings are drying up, and the captain will not give me a drop of fresh water to keep them alive. I'm ruined." "Then you must water them," said Praiseworthy. "Water them?" exclaimed the Frenchman. "Water them, you say? With what, monsieur?" "Why, with water," replied the butler. The Frenchman shook his head. "I have 50 gold pieces in my money belt, but 1,000 gold pieces will not bring me a drop of fresh water on this ship." "You must find a way," said Praiseworthy. Fresh water and coal lay waiting 1,000 miles further north of the port of Callao on the coast of Peru. But the Lady Wilma seemed rooted to spot, becalmed and motionless. All that day, Praiseworthy racked his brains. Fine men, Monsieur Gaunt and Mr. Azariah Jones, the butler told himself. Something must be done to help them. But even if a stiff wind came up, the gold ships could hardly make port soon enough to save the grape cuttings, and not even in Callao. Praiseworthy supposed, could he find a buyer for 18 barrels of spoiled potatoes? "Indeed, Master Jack," said Praiseworthy, "I seem to be a failure in my first attempt at both trade and agriculture. I suppose we should, at the very least, reimburse Mr. Azariah Jones for the few raw potatoes we helped ourselves to as stowaways." Suddenly, Jack's eyebrow shot up. A thought bolted. He was unable to speak for a full 3 seconds. "Praiseworthy," he exclaimed, "that's it."
"That's what?"
"You've got it."
"Got what?"
At that moment, Mr. Azariah Jones came pacing the deck from one direction, while Monsieur Gaunt came pacing from the other. Jack quickly explained, and Praiseworthy's eyes instantly lit up. "Gentlemen," said the butler, holding up his umbrella to stop the Yankee trader and the Frenchman, "Master Jack here tells me I have hit upon a marvelous notion. Why, it's so simple, a boy could have thought of it."
"What's this?" asked Azariah Jones, his hands clasped hopelessly
behind his back. "Monsieur Gaunt," said Praiseworthy, "as your agricultural vice, I suggest that you buy Mr. Azariah Jones 18 barrels of potatoes. They're a bit spoiled, but
but a good bargain.